You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have with me once again Amir Adnani. He's the CEO, President, and Director of Uranium Energy Corporation. It's a company that trades down here in the United States under the symbol UEC. It has 156.2 million shares outstanding, selling recently at around $1.95 in U.S. money. Gives it a market cap of something around $280 million. It's a company that I've followed for some time, and then with the uranium prices depressed as they have been over the past few years. Not as exciting to look at, but boy, if Michael Oliver is right in his prediction that we're getting close to a breakout, I think Uranium Energy is a company you're going to want to pay attention to. So I'm really glad to have Amir with me again. Thanks for joining me today, Amir.
Hi, Jay. It's good to connect back, especially at what seems to be a real turning point here for the sector.
Yeah, I think so. And in commodities in general, I know, but uranium seems to be maybe the last one to turn. Maybe, you know, it's got a long run ahead of it somewhere here, I believe. But in any event, you know, we've seen uranium prices at a decade low, but nuclear power expansion in terms of new reactors connecting to the grid is at a 25-year high. This dislocation is a contrarian signal, perhaps. And what is the quick status of nuclear power reactors under construction globally, Amir?
Jay, it's a great question, and also I think we need to look at uranium. You pointed out right now about how it seems like one of the last commodities to really turn the corner and rally. Well, unlike most commodities, it didn't have an event like Fukushima almost 7 years ago, if you remember the challenge in Japan. So it's important to look at pre-Fukushima, post-Fukushima to understand kind of where the sector is 7 years later. And that's where I really kind of think that we are. Nuclear power industry globally is truly a growth industry by any measure. There's about 447 operable reactors in 30 different countries. Just this morning, United Arab Emirates announced that they've connecting two nuclear reactors to the grid. I mean, here it is, a hydrocarbon-rich country, bringing nuclear power to generate clean carbon-free electricity. 57 reactors are under construction, Jay. That's more reactors under construction today than pre-Fukushima. And in 2015 and 2016, and going into 2017, which just ended, these were some of the best years in 25 years, as you pointed out, in terms of new nuclear capacity being added to the grid. And I would just add to that, the recovery in Japan. So I started this answer with Japan, what happened 7 years ago. And you look at Japan today, for the first time, there are a handful of reactors that have started operation. There are 14 reactors and applications that are being reviewed for safety review to restart more reactors. You have a prime minister in Shinzo Abe who's won landslide victories in late last year on the back of a nuclear power mandate to restart and have at least 20% of Japan's electricity come from nuclear power. So the story in Japan is definitely shaping up very positively. The global picture is one of a growth industry, as I say, by any measure.
You know, one of the major theme in the uranium market in 2017, towards the end, I guess the second half of the year, I can't remember exactly when, was a large, unprecedented amount of production cuts announced by the biggest producers. Can you walk us through that, Amir, and tell us, maybe this signals a bottom, perhaps? What are your thoughts on that?
2017 was definitely an extraordinary year for the uranium industry. I mean, against the backdrop of increasing nuclear power capacity that I just talked about and uranium demand that goes with that, the world's largest producers of uranium essentially announced production cuts that eliminate the oversupply that has been really bogging down the uranium market over the last 7 years. So we're talking about, for example, the country of Kazakhstan, which produces 40% of the world's uranium. Jay, compare that to Saudi Arabia, which is about 12% of the oil market.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine if tomorrow the Saudis announced that they were going to cut production by 20%, their production? Mm-hmm. Think about the impact that would have on the oil market. And that's what the Kazakhs have announced late last year. They've announced a 20% production cut. This is coming on the back of Cameco, another global major producer, announcing that they're shutting down one of their lowest cost uranium mines in Canada's Athabasca Basin. And so in total, these two announcements take 44 million pounds of uranium out of their market from big producers, low-cost mines. And so if you were a buyer of uranium, a utility who was getting complacent, thinking you can just buy uranium for cheap mm-hmm. for a long time, this creates action. This creates a sense of urgency. And, Jay, you've been following commodity markets for as long as I know, and you're an expert in this. You know, whether it's uranium or copper or zinc, when the big producers come in and announce major production cuts, that's drawing a line in the sand. That typically signals a bottom for a commodity, because if the big guys can't make money, then it just doesn't make sense to keep producing and creating losses. So this was the big event in late 2017, these major production cuts, that I really think sets the stage in a very bullish way in 2018. It eliminates excess 2018 supply. And if anything, we could be looking at a deficit for uranium in this year.
Interesting. Well, that sort of makes sense in lieu of what Michael Oliver is looking at in the charts. He's looking at, if we get over 28, he sees an explosive upward move in the uranium price. You talked about all this growth in Asia, new reactors and so forth. Where does nuclear power sit in the United States within the framework of a Trump presidency? I would imagine maybe more positive than during some of the other presidents. I'm not sure about that. But do we have a security of supply issue here in the United States? And how little amount of uranium is mined domestically relative to the amount that's consumed by the nuclear power industry in the U.S.?
There are 99 operating reactors in the U.S.
Wow.
Generating 20% of the U.S. electricity and 60% of the U.S. carbon-free electricity. There definitely has been a more positive posture and positive policy towards wanting to see the development of nuclear industry in the U.S. under the current administration. Department of Energy in August of last year produced their grid reliability study that basically concluded that without baseload nuclear power, the grid would lack stability, resilience, and reliability. So as a result of this, you definitely have a situation where this administration is paying particular attention in wanting to support through policy and action the development of the nuclear power industry, but also the uranium mining industry, because uranium is a vital commodity. Jay, right now almost 95% of U.S. uranium requirements for power generation are being imported, majority of that from Russia, Kazakhstan, countries in Africa. And with the production cuts that we were just talking about, one of the sort of stable sources of uranium being shut down, that's the mine in Canada, mm-hmm. The MacArthur River mine, there's even less security of supply available, even if we thought, Canada being a safe source of supply for the U.S. market. Nonetheless, nothing replaces indigenous supply, domestic supply for any market. So in the U.S., there's 50 million pounds of annual demand for uranium, and there's less than 2 million pounds of annual production. So this is about addressing an issue that could be a national security issue, an energy security issue, and one that could lead to thousands of jobs being created if there was a revitalization of the uranium industry. So I think within the big picture of what's going on in nuclear power industry globally, there is a very U.S.-centric story that's taking place as well around the domestic production of uranium. I believe that U.S. uranium in the next few years will be kind of going through its own narrative, Jay, and it's one mm-hmm. that's going to take growing importance in the eye of the administration and for these very strategic reasons that we're talking about.
Yeah, it sort of makes you wonder why the Obama administration decided to sell 20% of the United States uranium supply to Russia, but that's, I guess, an issue for another day. Your company was very busy last year, Amir. In fact, I've been following you on Uranium Energy Corporation for some time, actually since 2006. And I believe last year was a transformational year for your company, and with many acquisitions, including the fully permitted Reno Creek ISR project in Wyoming. drilling and increased resources at Burke Hollow and continued expansion in Paraguay as well. Walk us through your plans for 2018, Amir, if you would, because I think this is a company people are going to want to start paying some attention to, given the turn in the uranium industry.
Well, we came into 2017, Jay, first and foremost, wanting to make sure that we put the company in a strong financial position to tackle various opportunities, acquisitions, and organic growth. So exactly a year ago, we undertook a public offering. It was very successful. It was many times oversubscribed. But we raised about $26 million in equity, which gave us a very strong treasury. And to this day, as of our latest filings, we have just under $20 million of cash on hand. So you can see we've been very focused on managing the balance sheet, being in a strong financial position. That has then become the foundation to accomplish the other things we've done. So first and foremost, acquisitions. We acquired the fully permitted Reno Creek ISR project in Wyoming. As you know, for years, we've been building a portfolio of low-cost in-situ recovery projects in Texas. We wanted to build a second sort of base of assets in the U.S., and Wyoming is the next best place to be in terms of low-cost ISR projects. So we were able to acquire this project fully permitted for 2 million pounds per year. Remember, total U.S. production of uranium is 2 million pounds per year. It is a 22 million pound measured and indicated resource, had a pre-feasibility study completed. If you look at just the replacement, the amount of dollars that have gone into this project, Jay, it would be close to $100 million. Mm. And we paid $18 million in stock to make this acquisition. Yeah. So this is a classic kind of at the bottom of the cycle type of acquisition, but it's on U.S. soil, it's permitted. And even if you were to come tomorrow and want to permit a new uranium project from scratch, it could take 5 to 7 years. So there's a high barrier to entry and why we really covet these fully permitted low-cost projects. And that brings us to our Burke Hollow project in South Texas, where last year we drilled over 130 holes. We produced a new 43-101 report at the end of the year, increasing our total resources by over 30%. That project also has this mine permit and some other key production permits. And so when you kind of step back and say, well, what does it all look like now? You know, we have 54 million pounds of measured and indicated uranium resources, 45 million pounds of inferred uranium resources. We have our Hobson processing plant, which is a fully built, fully permitted uranium processing plant in South Texas. So we have that infrastructure advantage. And when you look at sort of the plans for 2018, it's a continuation of the same kind of themes, which is from a financially strong position, continue to make acquisitions. We've announced the acquisition of a project called North Reno Creek, which would be a really great bolt-on to our main Reno Creek acquisition. It will expand our resources and give us even more scale. We look to close that acquisition. We're going to continue to do drilling and development at the Burke Hollow projects to continue to grow the resources. And Jay, last year, despite the fact that the uranium prices upticked a little bit, we saw great share price performance in UEC. The UEC share price was up over 50%. So if the strategy and execution ain't broken, why, you know, why fix it? So stick to our knitting, stick to what we've done, and you've witnessed us do since 2006 as a company, execute each year. And this year, again, from a position of strong financial position, come in and execute more on developing and acquiring low-cost in-situ recovery projects. And last but not least, you know, our assets in Paraguay. As you know, for years we've now been diversifying and building an asset base in the country of Paraguay, South America. Geology is very similar there as Texas and Wyoming, so it's a great technical fit for our team and for the company. And we plan to further advance those projects where we have low-cost in-situ recovery assets. But at the same time, we have a non-core project there. That's something we can discuss next time you have me on your show, a titanium asset. Oh. Nothing to do with uranium, but a great large asset that we look to diversify and spin out and sell. And by doing so, it becomes a nice value driver for UEC shareholders.
Oh, excellent. Well, all I can think is, as I listen to you talk here and consider the situation, the uranium industry, and the shortage of supply in the United States, you're one of the very few companies that produce uranium. How many other producers are there in the U.S.?
Today, I would say, are we going to count the Russians that are getting a lot of press recently in the news? Not counting them, you know, you're talking about probably four companies in total that are
exactly.
doing anything. I mean, that's nothing when you consider.
Well, I certainly think that when, you know, with the turn in the commodities and uranium, and with when people start to realize the necessity of this metal and how maybe the supplies we've been relying on have aren't all that secure, that people are going to want to look very closely at your stock. I certainly am, and it's one I'm going to be talking to my newsletter in my newsletter about more now too. Amir, thank you so much. Any one last thought perhaps before we conclude our discussion today?
I think the timing is very important, and as we said, with the industry has certainly turned a corner, and I would say definitely the developments, Jay, in the U.S. with respect to U.S. uranium mm-hmm. is something your listeners should pay particular attention to. It's becoming a bit political, but it's a strategic commodity, and it's going to be something that I think you'll see more news and developments around. So a company like UEC with our assets in the U.S., fully permitted for production. And let's not forget, the chairman of our board is the former United States Energy Secretary, Spencer Abraham.
Yeah.
And so you look at the various pieces and assets and individuals that we have. I think we are in a pole position to really go for the mantle, Jay, and the mantle is to become the biggest uranium producer in the U.S., and I believe that UEC has all the resources to do that.
All right. I couldn't agree with you more. It's an exciting story. Thank you so much, Amir, for being with us. Well, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Alistair McLeod of Gold Money will be with us to talk about how this particular point in the credit cycle, commodities in general, are looking very, very good. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Alistair McLeod.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdes Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Bonterra Resources, a Canadian exploration company, is aggressively expanding its high-grade Gladiator gold deposit in Quebec, Canada. In 2017, Bonterra raised $40 million and attracted strategic investors Eric Sprott, Kinross, Kirkland Lake Gold, and New York-based VanEck Gold Fund. Bonterra is focused on updating its 43-101 resource model in 2018 and will incorporate up to an additional 100,000-plus meters of drilling where the dimensions of the Gladiator gold deposit has been expanded to date nearly 500%. Bonterra trades in Canada under the symbol BTR and in the U.S. under BONXF.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.